taken together confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, the president may seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control all transportation and communication, regulate the operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and, in plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all American citizens, end quote. Actually, that's a lie. There is no constitutional authority or powers given to the federal government to do any of those things. In fact, the Constitution states that the only thing that the president can do during a time of emergency is suspend the writ of habeas corpus. That's it, period. If you don't believe that, read your Constitution. Almost everything the federal government is doing is unconstitutional, unlawful, and is, in fact, insurrection against the supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution for the United States of America and the Bill of Rights. In the public papers of the Presidents of the United States, Forward, Washington, D.C., United States Government Printing Office, 1977, page 1, and by the way, this is a government document, it says, quote, "A majority of the people of the United States have lived all of their lives under emergency rule. For 40 years, freedoms and government procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have, in varying degrees, been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency," end quote. All unconstitutional, all unlawful. In the Review of the News, Weekly Review, England, October 12, 1977, page 45, it says, and I quote, "International communism of the Moscow order has many features in common with David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission, such as undermining the national sovereignty of the United States. It is for this reason, plus others, that one finds known Marxists supporting the goals of the New World Economic Order sought by the Trilateral Commission," end quote. In the Review of the News, Weekly Review, England, May 18, 1977, page 60, Arnold Toynbee, the historian, wrote, quote, "We are approaching the point at which the only effective scale for operations of any importance will be the global scale. The local states ought to be deprived of their sovereignty and subordinated to the sovereignty of the global world government. I think the world state will still need an armed police, and the world government will have to command sufficient force to be able to impose peace," end quote. In the Utah Independent, September 1977, A. Ralph Epperson also wrote in The Unseen Hand, Publius Press, Tucson, Arizona, 1985, on page 368, quote, actually it's a quote by Dr. Brock Chisholm, director of the World Health Organization, and he said this, quote, "To achieve world government, it is necessary to remove from the minds of men their individualism, loyalty to family tradition, national patriotism, and religious dogmas," end quote. Senator Barry M. Goldwater said in his book, With No Apologies, printed by Berkeley Books, New York, 1979, on page 299, quote, "What the trilaterals truly intend is the creation of a worldwide economic power superior to the political government of the nation states involved. As managers and creators of the system, they will rule the world," end quote. Ann Crittenden, in the New York Times International Economic Survey, February 4, 1979, said, quote, "It is now apparent that the old order is indeed crumbling, but amid such disorientation that the world is confronted not with a new order, but a new global disorder. Whatever shape the upcoming system eventually takes, it is clear that the major decisions affecting the international economy of the 1980s will be made in Tokyo, Bonn, and Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, as well as in Washington." End quote. Remember the motto. Remember the motto, ladies and gentlemen, of the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry Southern Jurisdiction, Ordo Ab Caeo. First, you create a state of utter chaos, out of which will come the order which you desire. Senator Barry M. Goldwater also said in his book With No Apologies, Berkeley Books, New York, 1979, page 297, quote, "In my view, the Trilateral Commission represents a skillful, coordinated effort to seize control and consolidate the four centers of power, political, monetary, intellectual, and ecclesiastical." This was printed in the New York Times, October 17, 1979, page 1, and also in Pat Riot's information newsletter, issue 22, fall 1994. Quote, Paul Volcker, former Federal Reserve Chairman, Trilateral Commission, and Bretton Woods Chairman, Chairman of James D. Wolfenson, Incorporated, Rothschild's St. James Place Capital Associate and Partner, Director on the boards of numerous corporations, including Prudential, Nestle, and Imperial, said, and I quote, "The standard of living for the average American must decline." Norman Dodd, in a videotaped interview of The Hidden Agenda, Merging America into World Government, Westlake Village, California, American Media, a one-hour video, VHS. He was the Ford Foundation president, H. Rowan Gaither, said this, quote, "The substance of these directives was to effect that we should make every effort to so alter life in the United States as to make possible a comfortable merger with the Soviet Union," end quote. The directives he referred to came from the White House. In Trilateralism, the Trilateral Commission and Elite Planning for World Management, Boston, Massachusetts, South End Press, 1980, on the back cover, it says this, quote, this was 1980, "What do Jimmy Carter, John Anderson, George Bush, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Henry Kissinger, Cyrus Vance, Walter Mondale, and Andrew Young have in common with David Rockefeller?" Answer, the Trilateral Commission. Members also include the top executives of Exxon, General Motors, Ford, Coca-Cola, Bank of America, Cargill, Bechtel, General Electric, CBS, Time, Barclays Bank, Rio Tinto Zinc, Mitsubishi, Daiichi, and the heads of the Republican National Committee, the AFL-CIO, the Federal Reserve Board, the Council on Foreign Relations, Georgetown University Center for Strategic and International Studies, the Bilderberg Group, and the Prime Minister of France, the British Secretary of State, the West German Minister of Economics, the Japanese Minister for Foreign Affairs, etc., end quote. William H. McElhaney II in the tax-exempt foundations, Westport, Connecticut, Arlington, said this, quote, "In the minutes, the trustees raised a question, and they discussed the question, and the question was specific. Is there any means known to man more effective than war, assuming you wish to alter the life of an entire people? And they discussed this, and at the end of a year, they came to the conclusion that there was no more effective means to that end known to man. So then, they raised question number two, and the question was, how do we involve the United States in a war? And then they raised the question, how do we control the diplomatic machinery of the United States? And the answer came out, we must control the State Department. At this point, we catch up with what we had already found out, and that was that through an agency set up by the Carnegie Endowment, every high appointment in the State Department was cleared. Finally, we were in a war. These trustees, in a meeting about 1917, had the brashness to congratulate themselves on the wisdom of their original decision because already the impact of war had indicated it would alter life and can alter life in this country. This was the date of our entry in the war. We were involved. They even had the brashness to word and to dispatch a telegram to Mr. Wilson, cautioning him to see that the war did not end too quickly. The war was over. Then the concern became, as expressed by the trustees, seeing to it that there was no reversion to life in this country as it existed prior to 1914, and they came to the conclusion that to prevent a reversion, they must control education. And then they approached the Rockefeller Foundation, and they said, "Will you take on the acquisition of control of education as it involves subjects that are domestic in their significance? We'll take it on the basis of subjects that have an international significance." And it was agreed. Then together they decided the key to it is the teaching of American history, and they must change that. So they then approached the most prominent of what we might call American historians at that time with the idea of getting them to alter the manner in which they presented the subject, end quote. James Phillips said in Renovation of the International Economic Order, Trilateralism, the International Monetary Fund in Jamaica, Trilateralism, the Trilateral Commission, and Elite Planning for World Management, Boston, Massachusetts, South End Press, 1980. I quote, "The International Monetary Fund's program aid policy demands, one, abolition or liberalization of controls on foreign exchange and imports by the recipient nation, that is, the reduction of any form of protectionism against U.S. or European goods, investment in free trade. Two, devaluation of the exchange rate, that is, currency devaluation. Three, domestic anti-inflationary practices such as control of bank credits, higher interest rates, and higher central reserve requirements. Control of government spending, reduction of so-called extravagant social services and programs, increases in taxes, prices, abolition of subsidies on consumer items, wage controls. Four, encouragement of foreign investment." In Bill Moyers' transcript of The World of David Rockefeller from the Bill Moyers Journal, February 7, 1980, WNET 13, 356 West 58th Street, New York, New York, 10019, he said this, quote, "David Rockefeller is the most conspicuous representative today of the ruling class, a multinational fraternity of men who shape the global economy and manage the flow of its capital. Rockefeller was born to it, and he has made the most of it, but what some critics see as a vast international conspiracy, he considers a circumstance of life and just another day's work." Constance Cumbie, written in the Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, Shreveport, Louisiana, Huntington House, Incorporated, 1983, page 20, quote, "One, the plan for the future includes the installation of a new world messiah, the implementation of a new world government and new world religion under Maitreya." Two, "A universal credit card system will be implemented. Three, a world food authority will control all of the world's food supply. Four, a universal tax. Five, a universal draft. Six, they intend on utterly rooting out people who believe the Bible and worship God and to completely stamp out Christianity." Manly P. Hall said in his Lectures on Ancient Philosophy, the Philosophical Research Society, Incorporated, Los Angeles, 1984, page 463, quote, "We are approaching a nobler era when nations shall be no more, when the whole earth shall be under one order, one government, one administrative body," end quote. A. Ralph Epperson, in his book The Unseen Hand, Publius Press, Tucson, Arizona, 1985, page 247, said, quote, just prior to the election, candidate Ronald Reagan was asked about who truly ran this country. He replied, I think there is an elite in this country, and they are the ones who run an elitist government. They want a government by a handful of people because they don't believe the people themselves can run their lives. Are we going to have an elitist government that makes decisions for people's lives, or are we going to believe, as we have for so many decades, that the people can make these decisions for themselves? You're listening to The Hour of the Time, brought to you by Swiss America Trading. This is a company, ladies and gentlemen, dedicated to the preservation of constitutional republican government. They care about freedom. They care about the message, about the purpose of this broadcast. Indeed, they are significantly supporting the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. They know, and I know, and many of you know, but haven't done anything about it, that there's only one real money, and that is the money outlined in the Constitution, the money declared and described in the law, and it has nothing to do with what you think is money that you carry around and deal with on a daily basis. Credit cards are not money. Checks are not money. Debt is not money. Electronic transfers are not money. Federal Reserve notes, especially, are not money. Not even close to it. They're not even notes. And there is no reserve, and the Federal Reserve is not federal. It's a privately owned corporation controlling the economy of the United States and literally robbing us blind because we have been so ignorant for so many years about the most important thing in our lives other than our religious beliefs and our family, and that's money. If you don't believe that, try existing without it for a few days and see what happens. Did you know that unless you pay for an item with real money, you cannot own it? That's right, folks. And there's much proof of that all around you. Would you like to get your hands on some real money? Have you ever really held a $20 gold piece in your hand? Have you ever wondered why it is so valuable? Have you ever wondered why gold demands such a high price? Why it is revered and cherished and collected and preserved and given to loved ones? Have you ever wondered about that? You're never going to know until you hold it in your hands, until you look at it, until you feel it. So you do a little research and find out what can be done with gold. What is it used for? You see, it has intrinsic value. Value built in. It is valuable in and of itself and needs nothing assigned to it. The demand dictates its value. And even if the demand were plentiful, it would still be valuable. Always has been throughout the history of the world. Get your hands on some real money. Call Swiss America Trading. Thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. Thank them for backing the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Ask them for a copy of the new newsletter, or the latest paper written by Craig Smith, and explore. Explore the possibility of getting your hands on some real money. Then you'll begin to understand what it's all about. And very soon, we're going to run Stephen Jacobson's tape about money. The best I've ever heard. The best anyone has ever produced. If you listen to this tape and you still don't understand money and economies and inflation and deflation and depression and all of the things, interest, usury, if you listen to that tape and you don't understand everything about money when it's over, then I'm afraid you've got a serious problem. So watch for it. Don't miss one single episode of The Hour of the Time, or for that matter, any of the programming on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, which will be expanding shortly. Call now, Swiss America Trading, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Ask for Frank if he's not available. Talk to anybody else. Frank will still be doing his market report every Thursday. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-BUY-COIN. 1-800-BUY-COIN. That's 1-800-BUY-COIN. That is 1-800-289-2646. William F. Jasper's Global Tyranny, Step by Step, Western Islands, Appleton, Wisconsin, 1992, page Roman numeral XV, I quote, U.S. Senator Jesse Helms, Republican, North Carolina, warned America of establishment insiders who are bringing this one world design with a convergence of the Soviet and American systems as its centerpiece into being. The influence of establishment insiders over our foreign policy has become a fact of life in our time. It is an influence which, if unchecked, could ultimately subvert our constitutional order, end quote. Trilateral Commission Report, April 1985, Plenary Conference, page 7, also printed in Pat Riot's Information Newsletter, Issue 22, in the fall of 1994. Trilaterist Martin Feldstein stated the U.S. dollar, quote, must decline to reverse its nearly 70% rise, end quote. Trilateralist C. Fred Bergsten stated, quote, simply require the large institutional investors, the insurance companies, the pension funds, the banks, to stop the capital outflow for a few months. That certainly could be done. It has been done in the past. It is the one step that could be implemented quickly. It would have an enormous effect in the exchange markets very rapidly, and it would not even have to be announced. End quote. Sir Michael Palliser, Chairman, Samuel Montague and Company, London, in the Trilateral Commission Report, 1985, Plenary Meeting in Tokyo, also reprinted in Pat Riot's Information Newsletter, Issue 22, Fall 1994, quote, the forthcoming economic summit provides an opportunity to reaffirm the principle of trilateral harmony and to initiate an urgent action program. Initiate a schedule, including the securing of negotiating mandates, leading to an early convening of a new GATT round of trade negotiations to cover both goods and services. A date certain for such a round should be fixed at the summit. Chairman's statement, quote, "It is necessary for both U.S. interest rates and the value of the dollar to fall," end quote. Gary H. Kaa, in his book, En Route to Global Occupation, Huntington House, Publishers, Lafayette, Louisiana, 1992, pages 32 and 33, said this, and I quote, "Rear Admiral Chester Ward, a former Council on Foreign Relations member for 16 years, warned the American people of the organization's intentions. The most powerful clique in these elitist groups have one objective in common. They want to bring about the surrender of the sovereignty and the national independence of the United States. A second clique of international members in the Council on Foreign Relations comprises the Wall Street international bankers and their key agents. Primarily, they want the world banking monopoly from whatever power ends up in the control of global government," end quote. Mikhail Gorbachev, in his book Perestroika, New York, Harper and Row, 1987, page 32, said, quote, "In the West, Lenin is often portrayed as an advocate of authoritarian methods of administration. This is a sign of total ignorance of Lenin's ideas and not infrequently of their deliberate distortion. In effect, according to Lenin, socialism and democracy are indivisible," end quote. Also, Mikhail Gorbachev, in his book Perestroika, New York, Harper and Row, 1987, page 34, quote, "Perestroika means mass initiative. It is the comprehensive development of democracy, socialist self-government, encouragement of initiative and creative endeavor, improved order, you'll have to excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. I had a serious coughing attack, so I will start that over. Perestroika means mass initiative. It is the comprehensive development of democracy, socialist self-government, encouragement of initiative and creative endeavor, improved order and discipline, more glasnost, criticism and self-criticism in all spheres of our society," end quote. He also said in the same book, Perestroika, quote, "The essence of perestroika lies in the fact that it unites socialism with democracy and revives the Leninist concept of socialist construction, both in theory and in practice," end quote. Are you beginning to understand who's in control of this country now? Mikhail Gorbachev also said in Perestroika, quote, "Those who hope that we shall move away from the socialist path will be greatly disappointed. Every part of our program of Perestroika, and the program as a whole for that matter, is fully based on the principle of more socialism and more democracy." He also said in the same book, and I quote, "We will proceed toward better socialism rather than away from it. We are saying this honestly without trying to fool our own people or the world. Any hopes that we will begin to build a different non-socialist society and go over to the other camp are unrealistic and futile. We, the Soviet people, are for socialism. We want more socialism and therefore more democracy," end quote. You'll find that on page 37, by the way. Mikhail Gorbachev was given quarters and buildings on the oldest army post in the United States, the Presidio at San Francisco, before it was ever legal for anyone outside of the military to use any of the buildings on that installation, while the installation was still, in fact, an army post, where he works constantly through the Gorbachev Foundation for World Government. Amazing. Gary H. Ka, in his book, En Route to Global Occupation, Huntington House Publishers, Lafayette, Louisiana, 1992, pages 32 and 33, Roberts, State Sovereignty, page 203, this quote is in both books, and I quote, Congressman John R. Rarick, deeply concerned over the growing influence of the Council on Foreign Relations, has been one of the members in Congress making a concerted effort to expose this organization. He warns, the Council on Foreign Relations, dedicated to one world government, financed by a number of the largest tax-exempt foundations, and wielding such power and influence over our lives in the areas of finance, business, labor, military, education, and mass communication, media, should be familiar to every American concerned with good government and with preserving and defending the United States Constitution and our free enterprise system. Yet the nation's right-to-know machinery, the news media, usually so aggressive in exposures to inform our people, remain conspicuously silent when it comes to the Council on Foreign Relations, its members and their activities. And I find that few university students and graduates have even heard of the Council on Foreign Relations. The Council on Foreign Relations is the establishment. Not only does it have the influence and power in key decision-making positions at the highest levels of government to apply pressure from above, but it also finances and uses individuals and groups to bring pressure from below to justify Let me read that last one for you again. The Council on Foreign Relations is the establishment. Not only does it have the influence and power in key decision-making positions at the highest levels of government to apply pressure from above, but it also finances and uses individuals and groups to bring pressure from below to justify the high-level decisions for converting the United States from a sovereign constitutional republic into a servile member state of a one-world dictatorship, end quote. That's called the Hegelian dialectic form of conflict resolution, where they create a problem and then they control both sides and they arrive at the answer that they wanted all along. In fact, you'll find that the conflict was created just to bring about that particular solution. Senator Jesse Helms, in the Congressional Record, December 15, 1987, page S18146, said, quote, a careful examination of what is happening behind the scenes reveals that all these interests are working in concert with the masters of the Kremlin in order to create what some refer to as a new world order. Private organizations such as the Council of Foreign Relations, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Trilateral Commission, the Dartmouth Conference, the Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies, the Atlantic Institute, and the Bilderberg Group serve to disseminate and to coordinate the plans for this so-called New World Order in powerful business, financial, academic, and official circles. William Grider, in Secrets of the Temple, How the Federal Reserve Runs the Country, New York, New York, Touchstone, 1987, page 12, said, quote, the Federal Reserve System was the crucial anomaly at the very core of representative democracy and uncomfortable contradiction with the civic mythology of self-government. Yet the American system accepted the inconsistency. The community of elected politicians acquiesced to its power. The private economy responded to its direction. Private capital depended on it for protection. The governors of the Federal Reserve decided the largest questions of the political economy, including who shall prosper and who shall fail. Yet their role remained opaque and mysterious. The Federal Reserve was shielded from scrutiny, partly by its own official secrecy, but also by the curious ignorance of the American public. End quote. You see, they know how ignorant and apathetic and stupid we really are. We had better change that very quickly, because they rely upon it. They cannot operate without it. In the Los Angeles Times, page 1, October 25th, Los Angeles Times, part 1, October 25th, page 33, Sacramento Assembly Speaker Willie Brown, Democrat, San Francisco, said Saturday he has asked the Assembly Office of Research to study his proposal to abolish city and county governments. In his weekly radio address, Brown suggested that California's 58 counties and 445 city governments should be replaced by a few regional agencies. Brown has acknowledged that his proposal would be politically almost impossible to carry out, said regional government would be cheaper and more efficient. Make no mistake, he said, as California approaches the year 2000, many new problems will confront us, and existing problems will intensify. William T. Still, in his book New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies, Lafayette, Louisiana, Huntington House Publishers, 1990, page 183, said, Nixon wrote that after Vietnam, Asia needed to evolve regional approaches to the evolution of a new world order, end quote. James Perloff also wrote that in The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations and the American Decline, Appleton, Wisconsin, Western Islands, 1988, page 20. And in the Arizona Daily Star, May 12, 1989, President George Bush at Texas A&M University on May 12, 1989, in a commencement address said, quote, ultimately, our objective is to welcome the Soviet Union back into the world order. Perhaps the world order of the future will truly be a family of nations, end quote. William T. Still, in New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies, Lafayette, Louisiana, Huntington House Publishers, 1990, page 181, said, quote, perhaps the greatest advantage the forces of the New World Order possesses is that they know they are at war. America, at best, only suspects it. How the New World Order will be manifested in the next century cannot be predicted, but one thing is clear. Secret societies will continue to masquerade as benign humanitarian organizations and to attack critics who penetrate their disguise. End quote. How well I know that. William T. Still also said in his book, The New World Order, on page 157, quote, the Council on Foreign Relations is still the preeminent non-government foreign affairs organization in the United States. Its membership list is a virtual who's who in American politics. In the same book, William T. Still also said on page 67, quote, on the front of the Great Seal in the back of what is now the Eagle flows a scroll inscribed with E Pluribus Unum, or one out of many. This has a double meaning, both the unification of the American states into the American nation and the ultimate goal, a unification of nations into one world state. But it is the Latin phrase on the reverse side of the seal, under the pyramid, that is the most controversial, Novus Ordo Seclorum, or New Order of the Ages, or New Secular Order, or, if you will, New World Order. From this, Illuminists of the present day derive their favorite phrase to describe their work, New World Order, end quote. Dr. Jose Arguelles, from a pamphlet published by the International Sacred Rites Festival, Haiku, Maui, Hawaii, page 4 and 5, said, quote, also implicit in all these events is a call for another way of life, another way of doing things, a redistribution of global wealth, in short, a new world order, end quote. A. Ralph Epperson in The New World Order, Publius Press, Tucson, Arizona, 1990, pages small xx and small xxi, said, quote, the new world will be called the New World Order. The United States will play a major role in bringing it to the world. World wars have been fought to further its aims. Adolf Hitler, the Nazis' socialist, supported the goal of the planners. If the slower, methodical techniques of change do not function, violence will be introduced and controlled by the planners. The people of the world will give up their freedom to the controllers because there will be a planned famine or some other serious occurrence, such as a depression or war, end quote, or maybe even an Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building, or a TWA Flight 800, or a
Waco, Texas, or a bombing at the Olympic Games in Atlanta, or, and it will continue, and it will continue, and it will continue, until the stupid, apathetic, and ignorant sheeple bow down on their knees and beg for their rights to be taken away from them and to be enslaved so that they can be safe and secure in a new world order. In the administration of George Bush, during an address before a joint session of the Congress on the Persian Gulf crisis and the federal budget deficit, September the 11th, pages 1358 through 1359, it says, quote, "Our objectives in the Persian Gulf are clear. Our goals defined and familiar. Iraq must withdraw from Kuwait completely, immediately, and without condition. These goals are not ours alone. They've been endorsed by the United Nations Security Council 5 times in as many weeks. We are united in the belief that Iraq's aggression must not be tolerated. No peaceful international order is possible if larger states can devour their smaller neighbors. A new partnership of nations has begun. We stand today at a unique and extraordinary moment. The crises in the Persian Gulf, as grave as it is, also offers a rare opportunity to move toward a historic period of cooperation. Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge. Today, that new world is struggling to be born, a world quite different from the one we've known. This is the vision that I shared with President Gorbachev in Helsinki. He and other leaders from Europe, the Gulf, and around the world understand that how we manage this crisis today could shape the future for generations to come. The test we face is great, and so are the stakes. This is the first assault on the new world that we seek, the first test of our mettle." End quote. George J. Church, in A New World, Time, September 17, 1990, page 23, said, quote, "The Bush administration would like to make the United Nations a cornerstone of its plans to construct a new world order," end quote. President Bush said in a televised address before a joint session of Congress on September 17, 1990, in the Weekly Compilation of Presidential Documents, Volume 26, Number 37, pages 1359 to 1360, quote, "Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge. A United Nations that performs as envisioned by its founders," end quote. Douglas Waller and Margaret Gerard Warner in Superpowers as Super Partners, Newsweek, September 17, 1990, page 27, said, quote, "Superpowers as Super Partners and A New Order, the United States and the Soviet Union united for crises management around the globe," end quote. President George Bush in the National Security Strategy of the United States, the White House, August 1991, page small Roman numeral V, said, quote, "I hope history will record that the Gulf crises was the crucible of the New World Order," end quote. Amity Shales in the Wall Street Journal, October 24, 1991, said, quote, "Deputy Features Editor Amity Shales wrote that rather than becoming the cornerstone in President Bush's oft-mentioned New World Order, many of those working within the Secretariat or at its missions in its vicinity argue that communism left a legacy. Westerners who worked at the United Nations found themselves surrounded by what many have called a communist mafia," end quote. In the United States Department of State Dispatch, Arms Control, March 30, 1992, page 257. Quote, quote, the Treaty on Open Skies is the most wide-ranging international effort to date to promote the openness of military forces and activities. It is designed to improve mutual understanding and confidence by giving all participating countries, regardless of size, a direct role in gathering information about military forces and activities of concern to them. I hope you're listening. This is the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. We now return you to the Hour of the Time. Welcome back to the Hour of the Time. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to suspend the rest of this and carry it on tomorrow, and we'll take calls for the rest of the remainder of the hour. Now, let me caution you about your calls. Please make sure that you are intelligent and that you have an argument to propound or that you have something to say, and you're not just calling in to cause a problem or to talk on the radio, because that's not what this is all about. In fact, if I had my way, I wouldn't be here doing this. I'd be down with my family doing something else. I'm doing this because it's necessary. And when I open the phones, it's to have good debate, good suggestions, good input. It's to talk about things. When you do what the caller did last night, which, having heard me quote somebody else, call in and then insist that I said it and that I was propounding it and that I was promoting it, and then not even listen to me when I tried to inform him that it was a quote. I was quoting someone else. I not only don't believe it, but I devoted a whole chapter in my book to a thesis on why the Constitution can never be superseded by any treaty. So the man just made a total ass out of himself, and because he wouldn't listen, I had to hang up on him. And then because he insisted upon calling back and trying to make a nuisance of himself, I had to tell him how really stupid he was. And it wouldn't have been necessary, except he demanded it. So we're going to open the phones now, and I don't care what subject you talk about. You can talk about anything that you've heard or anything that's going on in current events, or you can bring up a subject out of the blue. I really don't care. But make sure you've got something to talk about, that you're intelligent and polite, and let's have a dialogue, okay? But you should call 1-800-289-2646. Whenever I say a phone number, I do that commercial so much that that number automatically comes to mind. But our number is 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. and the phones will be open for the rest of the hour. Also, I want to remind all of you that it's absolutely imperative, and I mean absolutely imperative, that I hear from everyone who's listening. Please send me a postcard. If you're listening to this broadcast, send me a postcard. Tell me where you're at. I don't have to know your name. I don't have to know your address. I don't have to know your phone number. But if you would just drop me a postcard, tell me where you live, what state or what country. This is what's called an audience survey to try to figure out what size audience we have now, so that we'll know as the network grows whether we're improving or not. Tell me where you're at, and how many people listen to the hour of the time with you. If there's six plus you, then put down seven people, all total, listen to the hour of the time and the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. That is important, that we discover exactly what our audience is, so that we know what we need to do to make it grow. And we've got to make it grow, ladies and gentlemen. Many of you have satellite systems, but I know you have neighbors who don't. And those of you who do have satellite systems that are listening tonight, you need to get a low-power FM radio transmitter, which we can provide you a list of sources and the best ones that we know of, and the price, and so that you can do that. And we'll send you a complete network package, tell you how you can become a part of the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. And if you're listening on low power FM right now, and you would like to be a part of this, we can supply you with a complete satellite system in order to get the network from the satellite in beautiful, beautiful high fidelity sound. And maybe stereo at some later date, but right now it's beautiful, fantastic, high-fidelity sound right off your own satellite system, and then be able to rebroadcast it on a low-power FM transmitter. Just write us a letter and tell us that you'd like to be a part of this, and we'll send you all the information. We have an SX7 dish made by Orbitron, which is the very best. You can't get anything better than that. A CalAmp 25-degree C-band LNBF. A Pansat BR3500 receiver, 100 feet of RG6 coax cable, an inclinometer so that you can set up your dish, complete installation instructions for this satellite, as well as the satellite that we will be moving to in the very near future, along with the coordinates for your individual location. The total cost of the system is $485, plus $45 if you're east of the Rockies, or $60 if you're west of the Rockies. We'll give you a 30-day guarantee. We'll work with you on the technicalities of setting up your system. And if we just can't get something to work and we decide that it's the equipment, we'll give you a return authorization, and we'll just, you know, you just give it back to us, and we'll ship you a new unit. No problem, no questions, no nothing. After the first 30 days, then there's a one-year guarantee provided by the manufacturer, which, by the way, includes that first 30 days, so that you're not trying to hit them up for something, a year and a month later. They won't do it. Okay, let's go to the phones. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Mr. Cooper, this is Dean Davis from Alabama.
Hello, how are you?
I need a favor.
What's that?
Well, I need an 8x10 of you because we watch you on satellite.
You watch me?
Well, no, we listen to you. And there's this other person comes on during your broadcast that I really don't like to look at. And I thought we could put your picture on our TV screen while he's on.
Well, you could do that. We don't have any 8x10 photographs. In fact, we don't even have any photographs of me, at least not recent photographs.
One of you, a poo, or your baby, or anybody would be better than the one we're looking at.
I'll tell you what. Is that your buddy there barking?
Two of them.
Well, we have one out in the yard that's on patrol all the time. He's the watchdog.
We're outside right now.
Okay. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll see if we can take a family picture, and anybody who wants a family picture, I don't know how we can make that available, but I'll look into that.
Okay, I appreciate it.
And I know how it is to be listening to something on television and seeing somebody else there working their mouth or doing something. And occasionally it can be very humorous because every once in a while the movement of the person's mouth will exactly coincide with what's being said. And in context of the picture, it can sometimes be hilarious.
Well, the other person we watch is Chuck Carter.
Oh, I see.
On 30 Minutes While You're On.
The great pornographer.
Yeah.
Yes.
We used to listen to him and was, you know, kind of liked him, but we changed our mind quite some time ago.
Yeah. Let me tell you how right on I am about him. He has, in the past, sued anybody that even said his name wrong.
Right.
And when I indicted him for his involvement with pornography, he has not only not sued me, he's been very careful about what he says about me on his broadcast. And of course, he denies having ever been involved in pornography. But we have the statements and testimony of all the people who ever worked with him in that business.
Okay. I appreciate that, and we love your show.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, and God bless y'all.
God bless you, too.
Bye-bye.
And I like that y'all. Used to hear that all the time. My mother was from the South, and my sister lives in Texas. I guess you still hear it from my mother, and you'll certainly hear it from my sister and from her husband and from her children, my nieces. And you might even hear it from my brother once in a while, but he lives up in northern Oklahoma near Enid and doesn't quite get into it. He gets into the Oklahoma sort of dialect, and I like that too. In fact, we just had the best conference we've ever had. We just had in Oklahoma, in Norman, and it was wonderful. It was really wonderful. We had 5 full days of, and this is the way I conduct a conference, folks. Anything that I do has got to be productive. So from the minute that people got up in the morning, we gave them just enough time to go eat, and then the conference would start, and we took them all the way up to midnight. And there was no time to screw around or goof off or play or, you know, do anything. I mean, they were learning from the time they got up in the morning until midnight every single day, 5 days during that week. They got their money's worth, I can assure you. And though they all went away tired, and I went away exhausted, absolutely, totally exhausted, it was wonderful, and it was very productive. The last night of all of our conferences, we always have a camp out, and this was the best camp out we've ever had also. It was just wonderful. The weather was perfect. We were right on a lake. If you wanted to fish, you could fish. Not one mosquito bit anybody, and I consider that a major miracle, because that's almost impossible when you're in Oklahoma by a lake. The only thing that was kind of irritating was, and I had lived in Oklahoma as a boy. In fact, I went to Monroney Junior High School in Midwest City. I was the first class of that junior high school. And I was the first graduating class of that. My class was the first graduating class of that junior high school. And I had forgotten about the tremendous humidity in Oklahoma in the summertime. But I, you know, came back to me real quick there, because if you walked outside the hotel for even 5 minutes, it was as if you had jumped in a shower. And here in Arizona, we're used to the dryness, and you know, it's just dry. You don't sweat. You can go out and work all day long, and you know, of course, you get dirty when you work, and if you don't take a bath, you'll end up stinking like a horse that's been rode for 3 days. But as you perspire, it evaporates like instantly. So you don't have that. And you just have to be careful to drink a lot of water. But you're never uncomfortable because of humidity. And dry heat is much easier to take than humid heat. To me, 80 degrees in high humidity is worse than 120 degrees in dry
and dry heat in Arizona. But 120 degrees is not comfortable. Neither is 80 degrees with high humidity. And the two, to me, are you know, just about neck and neck. And what you normally think of Arizona as being is like Phoenix. Extremely dry, extremely hot, cactus and sand and dust blowing and all of that kind of stuff. And Tucson is almost the same. But most of Arizona, ladies and gentlemen, is not like that. Most of Arizona is what's called high desert, high mountains. For instance, I live at 7,500 feet. I can be at 9,500 feet within 20 minutes just by driving a little short distance from my home. And huge forests, just absolute unbelievably beautiful scenery. There are 20 scenic routes, highway routes in the United States, and we live right on one of them. And I can drive in any direction from my home and in 10 minutes be at a lake. In any direction. It's wonderful. Huge herds of elk, deer, antelope, tremendous herds of antelope. And not too far from my home is one of the best ski areas in the entire United States, but we never tell anybody about it. It's on Apache Indian land. It's run by the Apache Nation. And there are 11 lifts. And it's just magnificent. And the top of that mountain is around 10,000 feet. So, we also have skunks and squirrels and rabbits. And nobody could starve here. And nobody ever will starve here. That's just a given. The numbers, 520-333-4578. And the only reason, folks, that I'm doing this second hour is to be able to have a call-in session. And if you're not going to take advantage of that, then I'm going to go back to a one-hour format, because I'm not going to sit here just trying to think of silly patter off the top of my head waiting for somebody to call. Maybe we don't have much of an audience since we've left shortwave and gone to strictly a low-power FM format and satellite radio, but we will build it up. And if we're going to have to sit and not have calls during the second hour, then we'll just go back to a one-hour format, and we'll do it just like the way we did it before, and forget about taking calls during the second hour. Because there's nothing worse than sitting here trying to talk silly talk while you're waiting for the phone light to ring. And by the way, the way the phone rings here in the studio, folks, is a light blinks. And that's so that you don't hear the ringing of the phone on the air. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Bill.
Hello.
This is Richard from Atascadero, California.
Hi, Richard. What took you so long to call?
I've been listening to you, wondering what's going on here. I'm concerned about what's going on, and I have not been keeping up to date.
About what's going on, about what?
Well, the WWCR thing and all that.
Very simple.